And we have director Bao Nguyen with the film Be Water. And this is just a great way to conclude the program. I mean, who doesn't want to see more and learn more about Bruce Lee?
Yes, Be Water, Bruce Lee, coming from a line that I guess one of the quotes of Bruce himself in talking about his martial arts. Can you speak a little bit about how did you, were you just a fan? How did you come to want to tell this story?
Well, growing up as a Asian American, it was tough for me to see people who look like myself on screen, and in a lot of different aspects of society, not just on screen. And so when I was a little boy, I don't remember how old, maybe 6 or 7, I just remember, you know, flipping through the television and seeing, you know, Enter the Dragon playing on television. And I had never seen myself, for lack of a better kind of term, seeing someone like myself on screen in such a confident, such a masculine, such a heroic depiction. And I think I can, you know, a lot of Asian Americans, a lot of people of color kind of connect to Bruce Lee the same way. And so after my last film, which was about Saturday Night Live, I wanted to kind of re-examine American institutions, icons, in a way that felt a little more personal. And there was a lot of talk about diversity and representation in media, and that conversation is still going, as it should be. And I wondered, you know, it's hard enough being a person of color living today, trying to be an actor or actress in Hollywood. How did Bruce Lee in 1960s America make it, in a way, when the the Japanese were seen as the enemy in World War II, Korean War, and then obviously the start of the Vietnam War? So to America, I think the Asian, you know, image was often seen as the image of the enemy. So for Bruce to persevere through that period, I found fascinating. I wanted to kind of explore that more.
In your exploring of his life, I mean, you brought up so much about his life, that his parents being involved in the industry in Hong Kong, and all of the, I mean, just the background that I don't think anybody in America know. You know, they know his work from later in life. But yeah, can you talk about like your learning experience and how you brought that to the film?
Yeah, again, like Bruce Lee, the name kind of resonates with so many people, but I think not a lot of people know the story of Bruce Lee. It's funny, we finished the film very recently leading up to Sundance, and we were editing in London, and one of the receptionists at the post-production studio, she came up to me and she's like, oh, what are you working on? And I was like, oh, it's a film about Bruce Lee. And she's like, oh, the martial artist? And I was like, yeah. And she asked, oh, when's he coming in to watch the film? So you can tell that there's a gap in generation of who really knows the story of Bruce Lee and who just knows the name. And for me, I felt like I always knew the name, but I didn't really know who he was as a person. And for me as a documentary filmmaker, I sort of don't want to come in with any assumptions of what I know about a person or know about the subject. And so I did that with Bruce Lee, and we interviewed people who knew him very well. I read all his books. I watched all his movies, and it was kind of a learning process for me, or relearning process for me in many ways, while I was making the film, because I wanted to be on that discovery process along with the audience.
Yeah, I mean, as a youngster, I mean, I knew him first as Kato in the Green Hornet, and then in the 70s, it was as if someone told you that Burt Ward from Batman had become a huge international superstar. But I think from your film, something I never knew before was that he, as a child actor, he had appeared in films.
Yeah, that's one of the kind of the archival treasure troves that we utilize throughout the film. And for me, it's a coming of age story in many ways. So you have to understand where he came from in terms of his Hong Kong background, and obviously his acting background, because I think his charismatic screen presence, it didn't just appear on screen when he became Green Hornet, or I mean, when he became Kato on Green Hornet. So yeah, he was basically the Macaulay Culkin of Hong Kong when he was growing up.
And there's a line you don't expect to hear during Sundance, but
yeah, the Macaulay. Some of the footage that you did find that interview. I mean, was it hard to find that? Screen test that he had for Kato.
Well, that screen test is pretty well known in kind of the Bruce Lee fan world. One of the difficult things about making this film is that there's so many people with affection toward Bruce Lee, and they all have different entry points into how they view Bruce Lee. So I tried to make a film that was very personal to my experience and that I felt would be hard for someone else to do. Because it's not a definitive Bruce Lee film. I think it's hard for anyone to make a definitive film about a person in 120 minutes, 105 minutes in my case. So we did find some images that were quite rare, but we also kind of looked through the history of what was out there and made it into a film that spoke to specific themes of identity, representation, what it feels to be an outsider.
And that was well represented in the film, and him being, you know, obviously the lore of Kung Fu and just what happened and how you really stress on this, how America was not ready to see an Asian American in a lead role.
It still isn't ready in many ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was brilliant the way that you portrayed that in the film, and just let the audience kind of come to the, you know, really a lot of thought provoking things that came out of that. So talk a little bit about. I noticed that you didn't really talk about the death and of course all the lore and can you talk about Bruce Lee? I mean, the things that Brandon Lee, for example, you got a little bit of him and you were able to get an interview with Kareem, but Chuck Norris, did you reach out to Chuck Norris at all from that film? Or
I think there's so many people who've spoken about Bruce Lee, who knew Bruce Lee over, you know, their life, that, you know, he passed away 40 years ago, so certain individuals just don't want to talk about Bruce Lee anymore, which I can understand if you're being asked the same questions. I think it was interesting when I was interviewing people who were asked a lot. They came out of it saying that they've never been asked these questions that I was asking them. So again, I was having to see Bruce Lee through a very specific lens that isn't a lens that people are used to talking to him about.
In terms of, I think you, and at one point you say that he was not just about the strong, athletic, you know, dynamic fighter, and, you know, fighting off hordes of bad guys. Of course, all of them coming at him one at a time, like the joke always goes. But you were talking about him inserting, you know, some philosophical content into his pictures, and I don't know that the scene where he's sort of training the youngster. I don't know which of the films that's from, but
yes, that's from Enter the Dragon. So one of the things that is part of the Bruce folklore is that, you know, when Enter the Dragon started shooting, Bruce really wanted to make sure that there was his voice in the film. And, you know, years before, he had studied philosophy at the University of Washington, and he read a lot of books when he was, he had injured his back. And so he wanted to make sure that he had his say in Enter the Dragon, that it wasn't just your typical martial arts film, but something that he elevated with his own philosophy, his own voice.
I was a little curious stylistically, why did you choose the people reminiscing about Bruce, including his wife? The film for the you hear the voices and you see visuals of other items, and then at the end of the film you see the people that whose voices you've heard throughout the film. Any particular reason for making that choice?
For me, it was important for the viewer to be immersed in the time of 1950s, 1960s, up to the early 1970s. And I wanted to not have to cut back in a way to the present by showing a talking head interview, because a lot of, you know, Bruce Lee would have been 80 years old this year, and so the people that he knew are getting older.
Right.
And so when you see Bruce, you know, in his 20s, in his early 30s, and then you cut and you show someone who's much older, it doesn't feel, you're kind of taking yourself out of the present of Bruce Lee being 20 and 30, and you're like, oh, it feels like we're talking about the past if we did utilize that talking head interview. And I felt I wanted to be, again, immersed in that world as much as possible and feel that you were living the present time along with Bruce.
Well, we have been talking with Bao Guin, Gwen.
New one.
Yeah, and the U.S. documentary competition "Be Water" about the Bruce Lee story in a very different way than you've ever seen it. Please, if you get a chance to see it, where can they see it, Rick?
Next up, you have a showing today. Well, you're down in Salt Lake for today, but tomorrow, Monday, you'll be at the Ray Theater in the shopping center at 9:45, and on Thursday over at the Redstone Cinema at noon, and Friday you get down to the Sundance Resort. Bao, you're going to wrap up for us next Saturday at Prospector Square at 8:30 in the morning. And we're happy we're able to conclude our weekend coverage with you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. You haven't been listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPCW, brought to you in part by the Sundance Institute, presenting the 2020 Sundance Film Festival now through February 2nd, and also Acura, proud 10-year sponsor of the festival and supporter of independent film and music. Learn more at Acura.com.